Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Connor Newt, Ian Safar here with you on this Monday morning. Taking your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025. And to help us talk more about the Titans, we head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Corey Curtis from News 2, brought to you by Tennessee Men's Clinic. Corey on the sideline this past Friday night as the Titans took on the Atlanta Falcons. Corey, good morning. How are you?
I am delightful, sir. How are you today?
I am doing outstanding. I appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. Corey, your impressions for Cam Ward in preseason game number 2. The stat line's not great. I'm talking about a 2-of-7 performance, but overall, what did you make of the way that he played?
You know, I still think he's processing relatively well. I'm very excited that in 2 games he has not thrown an interception or been sacked. You know, that's, you know, no catastrophic plays in 2 games is a low bar, but it's a bar that I'm glad to see that they are meeting. You know, you'd like to see, you know, a few more plays down the field. You know, if Van Jefferson comes up with the one ball, this game looks, you know, wildly different. But also, you know, on the negative side, you know, you're playing against the Falcons' backups.
Yep.
And I know you don't have Ridley or Lockett, but you'd like to see some points on the board. So not spectacular, not terrible. You know, just, I think, just moving along. And, you know, we will wait and we will see. And I know that's a really boring answer, but I think it's kind of where we're at. You know, you don't see anything alarming, and you don't see anything that says, oh, wow, you know, they're going to score 40 points a game. You know, you certainly don't see that either. But, you know, Cam is a rookie, and there's going to be rookie moments, and then you're going to have wow moments where you see, you know, that's a big-time throw. I think the most exciting I see is an offensive line that continues to protect the quarterback.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, when we're not talking about the offensive line in a negative way, I mean, it's a total 180 from the way things have gone around here. I will say, Corey, my heart skipped a beat when I saw Dan Moore limping off the field the other night. So good to know he's okay.
Yeah, that was, you know, gosh, I mean, the Chargers just gave Slater all that money, and then and then he gets hurt, and, you know, your plans can really unravel in a hurry. And that would unravel things, because, you know, I know they think their depth is better than it was at that position, but I don't think anybody wants to test that.
No.
Corey, Gunnar Helm, rookie tight end, had a great catch, great touchdown catch. Granted, it was from Brandon Allen and against backups, but great touchdown catch and double coverage to get the touchdown. How long do you think it is before he's the starting tight end? Because I think it's imminent.
Well, I mean, I don't know if we'll call it starting tight end. I think we'll see 2 tight ends, you know, splitting and playing a lot. I think, you know, the catch is a great catch, because regardless if they're backups or not, he's got 2 guys draped all over him.
Yeah.
And, you know, one guy's even got his hand over his eyes, and he still comes down with the football. You know, some guys have catch radius. Some guys use their catch radius. And I think that's what I really like about Gunnar Helm, is you see that catch radius show up. I've seen it on the practice field. I've seen it on the game field. You know, Josh Wiley is 6'6", 6'7", and I can't say that I've seen that catch radius show up, which is why we're talking about Gunnar Helm as, you know, tight end 1A. I think he and Chig are wildly different and can give the team different things. So I think that they both can certainly contribute. I think, you know, I think they're getting what they expected from Helm in the passing game. What they're getting that they didn't expect is, I think he's a far better blocker than they expected. And, you know, that gets him on the field a lot more. And also, it kind of helps you hide what you're going to do if, you know, you can put him on the field in any situation.
So, Corey, I said your grade really good the other night in that game. What did you make of the way?
I looked like a genius in that one.
You did. What did you make of the way that he played? And I guess, what do you make of that room overall that, I will admit, I looked at on paper heading into camp, and I was like, okay, James Williams, Cedric Gray, Cody Barton, that could be pretty bad. And I think they might be a little bit better than maybe I gave them credit for heading into camp.
You know, I mean, Barton was a good player on a good defense last year, so it shouldn't surprise us, you know, that much that he's doing well. You know, the big question was the other guys, you know, who was going to develop. And, you know, you still got James Williams developing into that position. It's only his second year playing linebacker. You know, he's worked to transform his body. You know, he's certainly diagnosing faster than he was a year ago. You know, but you talk about a guy who's built for the position, and it's Cedric Gray. I mean, he is, you know, bigger, stronger guy up top. You know, he comes, he plays downhill hard. You know, you saw, I mean, I was worried that he wouldn't be with the team Monday because he was wanted for murder after what he did to that running back in pass protection. But, you know, he also, you know, he made several other plays in the backfield. But the big thing was, and Frank Bush told me before the game it was going to happen. He said, don't be surprised if you see him make a play in the passing game. And, you know, he got back there and made an interception when the big concern for him has been pass coverage. And look, it's still not his strength. You know, the Falcons in practice hooked him up on a wheel route one-on-one with Bijan Robinson, and that didn't go well. It's not going to go well for a lot of middle linebackers. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, which one that they go with. I think for me, and this is just me, you know, Gray as a first and second down player, and then when Winston's healthy, bringing him in on third down as kind of a hybrid and a third safety, I think has a lot of appeal to it. We'll see where they go. That position, I know everybody thought James Williams had it locked up. He does not. And I think that was made clear Saturday night. And I think there's a lot more people thinking, like I am, that Cedric Gray could start.
So how would you handle this last preseason game if you're Brian Callahan? Because, I mean, on the one hand, you've gotten Cam Ward out there. He's gotten some meaningful reps in preseason games. On the other hand, you did have an injury scare with your left tackle the other night that thankfully he walked away from. You know, it's a young offense that could use all the reps they could get. So how would you go about this if you're Callahan in that last game?
Yeah. I mean, look, you went 3-14 last year. I think they need to play. I think, you know, you need to get better. Your young quarterback needs to see as many things full speed as he can. And if he's going to play, everybody else has got to play. And, you know, I think Aya Manor, you know, needs, you know, those first team reps. If they're going to play him first team, which is what it sounds like, then he needs to get out there and face that competition, you know, because, I mean, that's what happened to him in the joint practices. He went out there on day one against A.J. Terrell, and, you know, it didn't go well. But it was also a wake-up call for him about, you know, this is what it is. These are the guys you're going to face, and, you know, you've got to step up and you've got to be better. You know, and there's only one way to do that, and that's to go against it. And so I think they've got to play. I mean, I understand the injury concerns, you know, those are always there, but I will always say you can't hide from injuries. They're going to come for you or they're not. And I'm going to say something I probably shouldn't say. I feel like the injury situation's a lot better here in year two. I mean, I don't feel like we're talking about near as much as we were the past 5-6 years. I mean, not near the soft tissue stuff. I mean, you know, Winston's got the soft tissue stuff, but that's coming back from an ACL. That's kind of to be expected some. But otherwise, you know, the team's gotten through a lot of it pretty well. And so, you know, you're going to worry about 10 or 12 plays, you know, then you should worry about the 17. You're going to get through the whole season, 17 games through the whole season. I think they need to play. I think they will play, but we'll see.
Corey, a couple of players that I think are less than sexy to talk about right now, but we'll talk about it anyway.
Well, there's a lot on the roster, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, Johnny Hecker and Joey Sly have been less than adequate to me. You know, Sly missed the extra point on Saturday. Hecker's out there shanking punts. Do you think that's going to be a concern heading into the regular season?
Well, let me start with Hecker, because you're right. Hecker has not looked good. I don't think there's no sugarcoating that. But I will say one thing. There is one punter in NFL history who has netted 42 yards per punt for 10 consecutive seasons. And that's Johnny Hecker.
Yep.
And so I would still have confidence he will get it figured out. Now, everybody's got an expiration date, okay? So maybe we're there, but this isn't a Super Bowl team anyway. So I'm not panicking. There's too much track record for Johnny Hecker to say he's going to be okay. So that's where I would be with Johnny Hecker, number one. Number two, Joey Sly. You know, Joey Sly had a very good camp, and then there was a day before they left town where he had a shakier day. And, you know, he has not been perfect. You know, he needs to be better in the shorter range, because what they love about him is that, you know, 60 yards, you know, once they get to the 40, they're in range where they're like, we're kicking, you know? I mean, if it's 60 under, they know they're in position to score 3 points.
60? We got kickers in the league kicking 70 and 72, Corey.
I watched him hit from, you know, 59 with ease in Atlanta. I mean, he hit from 59 and there was at least 10 yards on it after that. So, but I'm just saying,
yeah.
I think there's a confidence level from 59 in that there's an expectation. It's not a 50-50. They think it's higher than that, you know, to score 3 points from there where they don't hesitate, you know, about field position. They're going to go take the points. But he's got to be more consistent. You know, there's a reason he was available, right? You know,
yep.
if he was, you know, automatic, he'd still be in a uniform, but he's on his third, fourth team here. He's been with who? The Panthers, the Patriots. Not sure who else.
Pulling that up right now. Washington, first in as well, yes.
Yeah, he's been around for a while. And, you know, if he's not kicking, you know he's in the weight room. You know he's strong enough and you know he's in shape.
Corey, last thing for you here. You planning the parade after Caleb Williams led a preseason drive?
No, I'm not planning a parade, but I was really excited to see how he played. I mean, not just – it wasn't that they scored 7 points. And I don't know about – did you watch it?
I did, yes.
Yeah.
Got the ball out.
Yes, that was what I was exactly most excited about. The ball came out quickly and accurately. It was quick and it was accurate. And if he can play like that, he's got weapons. You know, Luther Burden is – you know, he had a nice night last night. But, you know, the fact that Caleb got it out shows he's learning and shows he's coachable with a coach who's shown he can coach, you know. And I always say it's a player's league, but coaching does matter. And last year he needed better coaching than he got, and you saw that. And so, you know, that I don't deem it all fixed, but he is too talented to not be a good player in this league. But, you know, you can't take catastrophic plays. And his catastrophic play rate last year was, I think, upwards of 12.5% because he took 68 sacks.
Yeah.
That's just, I mean, I don't care how bad your pass protection is, you can't take 68 sacks. It used to drive me nuts, you know, as a Bears fan when they would play the 49ers and I would see, you know, Joe Montana just dirt the ball or just take a – or just drop to the ground to take a 3-yard sack when we're trying to just knock his head off. But that's how you win in this league at that position. And it's why I bring up the Cam Ward situation. He has zero catastrophic plays in 2 games. Zero. His catastrophic play rate in 2 games is 0%. Okay. Will Levis's was 15%. So, you know, if they can keep that percentage, his number in Miami, I think, was 6%. If he can keep it under 10% this year, that alone will win them a game.
I totally agree. Corey, great stuff as always. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. Welcome back to town, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, sir. Good luck to you. Tell Joe I miss him. I hope the gout gets better.
I will. You know, we all hope that.
I think Ben Franklin had gout.
I think you're right.
So, you know, Joe... Ben Franklin.
Very comparable.
Maybe the same person.
Maybe so. Same impact on society as well. No doubt about that.
Yeah. Joe standing out there getting struck by lightning.
Thank you, Corey.
Bye.
Corey Curtis brought to you by Tennessee Men's Clinic. We'll react to what Corey had to say there. Your thoughts on Rex Road being compared to Ben Franklin and more. All that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Be a hero and save a life this Wednesday at the 12th annual Williamson County Battle of the Badges Blood Drive. The drive will be held at Brentwood Concord Road Library Wednesday from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. 102.5 The Game will be on hand from noon to 2 with swag to give away and a chance to win some free concert tickets as well. That's coming up this Wednesday, the 12th annual Williamson County Battle of the Badges Blood Drive. Appreciate Corey Curtis from News 2 for being with us in the last segment, taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. One texter says, if Ben Franklin was still alive, he'd be smart enough not to be a Titans fan, but also he'd be an Eagles fan and calling Jalen Hurts generational. Maybe so.
I'm thoroughly convinced Joe is Ben Franklin now. It's
there,
like a...
There are some similarities.
I would love to hear a Ben Franklin football breakdown, honestly.
I would too.
Did you ever see that episode of The Office where they're having like a bachelor party?
Yes.
And they try to get a dancer and they accidentally call like a Scholastic bookstore spokesperson, and yes, it's Ben Franklin.
Oh, yeah.
That's what this is making me think of.
I mean, Rex Road's been compared to worse, so.
That's true.
A lot worse.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that comparison holds up. I need to research whether or not Ben Franklin had gout.
Oh.
Corey threw that out there. I need to go check.
He sounded like he was pretty sure about
that. He did.
But I don't know. It sounds like something back in the day people would get.
Yeah.
You know, gout especially. Just not knowing the whole dietary situation and just kind of eating whatever's available and lots of unprocessed mead and red meat.
Yes.
Meat. Is Joe sitting on his roof flying a kite right now?
I don't know.
Is that what he's doing?
Don't know.
Is that why he's out?
Rob on the text lines has a problem with Corey saying zero catastrophic plays for Cam Ward. Says he's got to stop saying that. It was four possessions, and he hit a defensive back in the hands who dropped it. Talking about the week one throw against Tampa Bay. Again, we'll see what it looks like when the regular season comes around. I mean, I'm with Corey. Like, if you can keep your sacks down and your turnovers down to under 10%, you felt – look, you know, he says Will Levis was 15 last year. I haven't looked the number up. It felt like it was about 45%.
Yeah.
Last year, just catastrophic plays with Will Levis back there. So if you could keep it down under 10, you'd feel good. And again, the offensive line, how much is what we've seen in the preseason a representation of what they are? And how much are we going to find out in week one against Denver, right? Like, I feel good about what we've seen and heard about the offensive line to this point in training camp. Having said that, it is training camp. And you're going to get a pretty good look in week one against Denver. And then you're going to get another pretty good look in week two against LA. So how do you hold up if you're that offensive line? And is the pocket consistently clean for Cam Ward to sit back there and deliver the football?
It's got to be. And they got to stay healthy as well. I mean, I lost my breath for a second when Dan Moore went out with an injury. He was limping off the field. I was like, oh, that's not good.
No.
But they got to stay healthy because you don't have depth outside of that. I mean, Jackson Slater.
Jalen Duncan out there.
Jalen Duncan?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Is he going to make the roster? I
think so.
Oh, man.
I think he's going to make it.
That
we'll see.
Tells you a lot about this roster. But, I mean, you have Corey Levin is solid, I guess. Jackson Slater's a rookie, but apparently they can plug him in anywhere and he'll be just fine. Outside of that, you got nothing. So, like Cam Ward, you better hope none of them go down, because if you lose a piece on that offensive line, which has been reportedly solid, then we're going to have some problems. It's going to be messy.
Chris in Nashville asking if we think the Van Jefferson play on Friday was a drop. Yes, I think it was a drop. Do I think it was like the most egregious drop of all time that some Titans fans are making it out to be? No. Like, I think Brian Callahan summed it up well, and he called it probably would have been a tough catch. It's a catch you want your NFL wide receiver to come down with. I mean, it's definitely – somebody asked about Calvin Ridley earlier. I mean, it would definitely be a catch that I would expect Calvin Ridley to make.
I mean, like, he would have to adjust to make it.
Yeah.
But.
Like, I think there's probably – in the discourse of all of this, there's probably been way too much acting like Cam Ward dropped it perfectly in a bucket. It was a good throw. Like, I'm not trying to say it was a bad throw. It was a good throw. You want your receiver to come down with it. It was not a perfect throw, right? Like, it was a little far out there, and you'd like to see Van Jefferson make the catch. So, yes, I mean, I would consider it a drop. My standard for drop in the NFL is pretty high. Like, if you get your hands on it, you need most times find a way to come down with the ball, unless you're just getting blasted out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he would have to adjust to make that catch, but it's not like Cam Ward used the force or something and, you know, dropped it 2 inches in front of him. It was a good throw, but even Calvin Ridley would probably have to adjust. And I would like to think Calvin Ridley would adjust and take it all the way home. But, yeah, I think it is a little bit overblown. That said, Van Jefferson is kind of known for these drops.
Yeah. Well, so. Van Jefferson, I said earlier in the show, he's like a fifth receiver, right? Like, it's what he is, and it's what he's been for a while now. So, you know, is he going to make the team? Probably. I would hope that there comes a point, and the sooner the better for me, that like an Io Manor steps into that third receiver role where you're not having to rely on Van Jefferson to be out there catching the ball all that much. Like, you know, Ridley, whatever you get from Lockett, and you need a guy like Io Manor or Oliver or whoever to step up and kind of be that next guy. Like, it would be great early in the season to get to the point where you're not having to rely on Van Jefferson all that much. Because, again, I think he's like a fourth or fifth wide receiver in the league.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that, but that's what he is. Like, if you're expecting him to be more than that, then that's on you.
I think he's a transitional piece. Like, he's the kind of guy you bring in just to get you by for a little bit and hope one of these young wide receivers hits or exceeds expectations this year. And I think between DK and Io Manor, it's more likely to be Io Manor, but we'll see. I mean, yeah, he's not anything special. Like, he's just kind of a roster spot that you have filled, that you feel comfortable about throwing him out there and, you know, clogging up some space or something. Maybe catching a few short balls, but you don't feel like he is the kind of guy that's just going to light a defense on fire.
Apparently, Ben Franklin had gout at the age of 44.
I'm doing some research right here. He has actually written, Benjamin Franklin wrote a book called, quote, Dialogue Between Franklin and the Gout.
He spoke to the gout.
Yes, apparently after a bad case of a middle-of-the-night wake-up with gout has put it, I guess, a little pen to paper.
A little inspiration.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yes, Ben Franklin did deal with gout.
A wordsmith.
Like Joe.
The comparisons to Joe just keep coming.
Yeah, I wonder if Ben Franklin would write for The Athletic.
I think he probably could.
I would like to hear a breakdown of a sports column from Ben Franklin, actually.
Do you think Joe, like, yells at the gout like Ben Franklin did? Like, be gone from me, gout, or something like that?
I think there's a chance. I think he probably uses some more colorful language. But yes. I think there's a chance. 615-737-1025, our phone number. More of your thoughts to get to on the Titans. Plus, we will get into the Trey Hendrickson situation brewing in Cincinnati. All that coming up. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. This fall, live at the Pinnacle at Nashville Yards, Tim McGraw will perform at Trinetics' Rock the Cradle. This event sure to be a great time celebrating a great cause. Proceeds from the event will support newborns and moms at Ascension St. Thomas Midtown. You can get your tickets now at rockthecradlenashville.org. Taking your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025, our phone number. Get Up currently asking what Cam Ward showed Friday against the Falcons on ESPN while showing highlights of his game against Tampa Bay. So
brilliant.
That. We'll see.
Great production.
See how things go on that front. I'm looking at just the response today from Titans fans. And again, we're talking about, I think in totality, you had three series against Atlanta, two against Tampa Bay. So it's five series that we've seen from Cam Ward to this point against backups for the most part. And, you know, they had the one touchdown drive against Tampa where he made some big throws on that drive, specifically to Ridley.
Yeah.
And they got down the field and Pollard finished it off. You know, it looked like they were about to just march right down the field on the first drive the other night. He had the big play to Io Manor for 35, and then that drive ended up stalling after that. You know, the big play offensively that was made in the game for the Titans was the catch by Gunnar Helm, but that was from Brandon Allen at quarterback. you know, we had somebody call in earlier talk about how it'd be great to see him score some points against these backup defenses, and I agree. I'm less concerned about the points that they're scoring in the preseason game, and I'm more looking at Ward specifically. Like, how does he look? Does he look like he's comfortable back there? Is he putting the ball where he needs to put it? I think mostly the answer has been yes, although, you know, we read a piece from PaulKuharski.com earlier that Blake Bedingfield talked about the footwork. And Orlovsky has talked about that when looking at Cam Ward Tate. We talked about that in the draft process of just looking at his footwork, and it's inconsistent. You know, one play it's really good, and then it gets away from him, and his footwork is all over the place after that. So that is going to be something, like, if you're into the weeds of it, as the regular season goes, like, does he get better at that? And does Brian Callahan, who, again, I've talked about, got to show you something. Like, he's worked with quarterbacks. Does he get that part of it corrected as Cam Ward's season goes on here?
Yeah, I mean, it's all about progression for him. And that's not a weak fix. That's a, as the season goes on, how does he improve? Look, you got to be comfortable with him making mistakes. It's just going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen to the level of Will Levis mistakes, but he's going to throw some picks. He's going to do some dumb stuff that, Robbie, I've heard you say this before, make you say, what the hell are you doing out there?
Yeah.
It's part of being a rookie quarterback. It's a progression. It'll take some time, but I think based on some of the positive flashes you've seen in the preseason, particularly last week, you saw pass pro, and you saw how he moves outside the pocket and finds the open man. I think that you're seeing positive signs of a developing quarterback. And I think between that and his mentality, his confidence, his accountability, I think you're seeing all the makings of what you want to see if you're the Titans. I think you're seeing what you want out of a first-round quarterback.
Well, and again, with the understanding that the idea here is, you know, he's at his starting point in camp, right? And he's going through camp, and he's seeing some things for the first time, and he's learning. And by the time week one rolls around, that's going to be – he's going to see things in week one against Denver that he has not seen before at the NFL level. And there's probably going to be some times in that game where he gets fooled. What does it look like from week one until week 18 when everything's said and done? You know, and I'm not talking about record. Now, record's part of it.
Yeah.
But I'm not talking about record. Like, how much progress does Ward make during that time? Can you keep him upright? Can you keep him healthy? And does he figure some things out along the way where at the end of it, you get to the end of the season and you're a Titans fan and you're excited about next year, right? Like, you're like, all right, let's go. Let's play some football next year and let's get this thing going because we feel like we've got our quarterback. And again, like, I think it's going to be – he would have to do something incredible in his rookie season for us to know for sure, right? Like, for him to know for sure that he's the guy. But, like, can you get to a point where the physical talent that he clearly has, the mental makeup that I think he has, does he have the right coach? Does he have the right players around him? I think some of those answers we're going to find out.
Yeah.
This year. And some of those answers I think we kind of know heading into this. Like, I don't know about the coach. I don't feel great about Callahan, but I don't know. The players, I think we know. Like, he does not at the moment have the players around him. And they're still a ways away from getting that part of it where it needs to be.
Yeah. It's a gradual process, like I said. Now, as far as the coach, I don't feel great about Callahan either. But I feel like because you drafted the quarterback, and you know, Callahan's a quote-unquote quarterback guru. He specializes in developing quarterbacks, as we've been told. I think you have to commit to Callahan for the next 2 to 3 years if the record shows correctly. Now, obviously, if he
displays that he has some semblance of knowing what he's doing, I would agree with that.
Now,
I don't think you do it just for the sake of doing it.
Right. Now, obviously, if he goes out and wins one game in the first 6 weeks, then he's probably getting fired in the middle of the season. But if you go out there and you win 5, 6, 7 games and Cam Ward looks good, then I think you win yourself another year. And then I think we start to say, all right, if he doesn't take the next step and win 10 games this season, then we can probably do something about it. But I think this year especially is about the relationship between quarterback and coach. And I think you've got to find that balance. And if things go wrong, then unfortunately I think the coach is going to get blamed because they're not going to throw the first overall pick quarterback under the bus in his first year.
Oh, I said he'll be the last one to get blamed this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he will be the last one to get blamed. Callahan will be the first. Mm-hmm. And like it or not, I mean, it's life in the big city. That's how it goes in the NFL.
Yep.
Especially when you're 3-14 your first year. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll get into the Trey Hendrickson situation brewing in Cincinnati. The Vols have named a starting quarterback. We'll get your thoughts on all that. Coming up next, you're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Monday morning. Rex Road.
Joe Rex Road is not here.
On vacation this week. He will be back next week. By the way, speaking of next week, next Monday, we will begin opening up our spots for the Robbie and Rex Road Fantasy Football League. We've had a lot of you asking about it. We're navigating through how many spots are going to be open, but we will be opening that up next week, starting a week from today. So keep that in mind out there. For those of you who have been asking, next week we will start that process of filling our league, and we will have the draft coming up at Twin Peaks in Cool Springs. So looking forward to all that. Taking your thoughts, 615-737-1025. Trey Hendrickson and the Cincinnati Bengals apparently at a stalemate to the point where the Bengals are listening in on trade offers for the 30-year-old edge rusher. He leads the NFL in sacks the past 2 years. He had 17.5 in each of the past 2 years, 2023, 2024. He is 30. He will be 31 coming up in December. We've had some Titans fans weigh in on the Trey Hendrickson situation earlier in the show. I don't think it makes a whole lot of sense for the Titans to entertain that. You'd have to give up the assets to go get him. Then you'd have to pay him a contract at the age of 30, and then he's 31 in December. I don't think you're a Trey Hendrickson away from being a legitimate threat. So by the time that he's 33, 34, is he still the same player? I just think there's a lot about it that would give me pause from the Titans standpoint. But what do you make of the Hendrickson situation as a whole, Joe Burrow and how he's got to be looking at this right now, and Cincinnati, who, I mean, to their credit, held on to Chase, held on to Higgins. They gave Burrow the big deal, but it doesn't look like they're budging on Trey Hendrickson. Are they going to screw up their window here with Burrow leading the way with those other two guys at wide receiver? What do we make of all this?
I think it's just a testament to how mismanaged the Cincinnati Bengals organization is. I mean, it's a historically and traditionally cheap organization, not willing to budge on these high contracts. I'm honestly surprised that they paid Burrow the money they paid him, and they paid Chase the money they paid him, and they paid T. Higgins the money they paid him. And honestly, they finally paid Shamar Stewart, the rookie out of Texas A&M, the money that he wanted. So I think they're going to screw this up because they're the Bengals, and they're going to just live in the world of mediocrity for the rest of all time. I mean, we're talking about a franchise that held on to a coach for 10 years because he was subpar. I don't know. It's just, I think they're going to screw this up, and we're going to be talking about, well, Joe Burrow has a lot of help on offense, but he doesn't have the defense to back it up, and we're going to be talking about that for a long time.
Do we think they actually move him?
You know,
Hendrickson.
I've thought about that.
Like, if you're the Bengals, you just ignore it and you plug on, right? Like, the way you are with this team in a win-now mode, Hendrickson in his age, I don't necessarily, you know, blame them for not wanting to re-up him to a new deal, you know, an expensive deal, given his age and where he's at and where they're at. That's why, if I'm them, I just ignore the trade requests and just play out the year.
I mean, you could, and then you at that time he's 31 after that, and you know, what's he gonna get on the open market? You go from there.
You
tag at that point, who knows? But like, I look at it and I say, you've obviously opened your window here. You've missed the playoffs first off 2 years in a row. Now, one of them, Burrow was hurt, so it's like, well, Burrow got hurt, you understand, missing the playoffs. Last year, Burrow had like an MVP type year. Like, he was crazy good last year, and it still wasn't good enough to even make the playoffs. And that was with Trey Hendrickson, by the way,
who led the NFL in sacks.
So what does that mean? Like it, everybody's going to include them in the picture this year. Now, I don't think that they will be mentioned by most in the same breath as, you know, Kansas City, Baltimore, Buffalo. They have been in the past. I don't know that they're going to be that mentioned that way this year. But, like, if they don't make the playoffs this year, and if they don't make some noise in the playoffs, like, they got to the Super Bowl. They took down Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs on the road in Arrowhead. And it kind of felt like, well, it's going to be Burrow and Mahomes just kind of dealing back and forth with each other for the next few years. And Cincinnati's not been able to get in there with the same sort of consistency. It's amazing to me that we're talking about that team missing the playoffs last year with the roster that they've got. So, look, the age of this for Hendrickson would give me pause too, but I also feel like you're on a window right now where you better win. Like, they need to go win right now. So, that's a long way of me saying I still don't think he's going to get traded
and
at the end of the day.
I mean, how many teams are really going to give up what Since he really wants to get for Hendrickson?
Well, that's the other thing. Now you,
like, how many options you have? What other teams are there who have money right now to sign you to a new deal and are willing to give up a bunch of draft picks or a pick and a player at this point?
Right, and it's played out so publicly that, like, you've lost some leverage here too. Like, now that you're quote unquote listening to offers, like, are you going to get people's best offer for Trey Hendrickson? Probably not. So, are you? What's the offer got to be for you to consider pulling the trigger if you're Cincinnati?
Yeah. I think it's just a gut reflex of mine that I feel like they're going to screw this up because they're such a cheap organization. But I could totally see a world where, you know, they give him what he wants and we move on.
Let's head back to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in, Jack in East Nashville. Jack, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
You're welcome. Whenever you start talking money, who's getting paid, et cetera, with these teams, to me, there's always a couple of things to keep in mind. All the 32 teams, with the exception of Green Bay, are private, family-held corporations.
Yep.
Let's say you're running a roughly $1 billion-a-year corporation, and every year from the TV money, you get $400 million or better in mailbox money without doing anything. So, if you think about it, there's no NFL team ever went bankrupt. And despite what the team is doing record-wise, players, how well the team is playing in the standings, you can make one tremendous amount of money even if you go 3-14.
Yeah.
So, I always take this stuff with a grain of salt that, yeah, they're worried about it, but how worried are you going to be deciding when to trade in my Gulfstream I have now for the newest Gulfstream?
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Jack. Appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, that part of it is for sure right. I do think we know, though, at this point, like, you know, not all owners are created equal in this league. Like, Stan Kroenke's got an absolute crap ton of money.
Mm.
The Bengals don't, like, relatively speaking. Like, to me and you, yeah, they do.
Yep.
But, you know, you're talking about when you line up the NFL owners, the Bengals are going to be at the bottom of the list. So, again, now we can talk all day about how much that matters. Like, to Jack's point, it's not like they're losing money out there.
Yeah.
But I think this is more than just, like, being cheap. I do think there's an element of if they believe deep down that Hendrickson's already played his best football, do you really want to commit long term to that? Like, yeah. I think if he's 26, then this is probably a pretty easy decision.
Yeah.
The fact that he's 30, turning 31.
I mean, he's not Micah Parsons.
I think it makes a big difference, right?
Yeah. Like, I think you said it earlier. He's either well in his prime or on his way out. So, I think he's on the back end of his quote-unquote prime. It's just a matter of how long-term do you want to commit to him.
Yeah. And
I don't it's clear that they're kind of fighting that as well. I don't know how much they actually think they want to commit to that.
We said it earlier, the Tennessee Volunteers have named a starting quarterback, Joey Aguilar, the starter, and he will open the season for Tennessee against Syracuse. Not a huge surprise there. I think he was the leader in the clubhouse the whole time. He's got the experience. He has thrown a lot of interceptions in his career, through 14 last year, through 10 the year before that at Appalachian State. And Josh Heupel typically an offense where you don't throw a lot of interceptions at the quarterback spot. So kind of an interesting problem there to see if that's just a him thing. Is a Heupel's system kind of mitigate some of that? It's going to be interesting to see that part of it and the way it goes down. But Joey Aguilar, the starting quarterback for the Tennessee Volunteers. We'll see how it goes.
Joey A.
Connor, great stuff. You'll be back with me tomorrow doing it all over again.
You know what? What the hell? Maybe I will.
That's right. That's it. It does it for us today. Next man up with Jake Lyman coming up next. You're listening to 102.5 The Game.